thing. So, you know, as a church, we try to give space for people to have varying opinions, and we are not afraid of people being wrong. And I just appreciate you modeling that on your position on orange juice. We are flawed human beings, all of us. And some of us have objectively wrong stances. And that doesn't change. I feel like I grow as a person for being in a relationship with you. Thank you. I'm really excited to be back here. For those that think I left the church a month ago, I've been in kids' church for like a month, and I love it. I'm so thankful to be back with you. But I do miss my Magna Tile Tower that I've been able to build each week and let kids knock over for me. So you're going to bear with me if all of a sudden I start fiddling with things with my hand. I'm used to having a toy with me at all times. I'm going to pray again if you guys would like to join with me. Jesus, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. Thank you for all of the things that I believe you have on the table for us when we intentionally show up and create space in our life. I just pray that this morning would feel like that. Maybe there's narratives or things in our mind that say, like, this is what I need to be trying to do this morning. And Jesus, I just ask for help for your voice to be louder than that, to say what you have for us. Maybe it's quiet. Maybe it is connection. Maybe it's challenge. Like, maybe we even just need to not pay attention to what I'm saying, because Jesus, what you have for us right now is actually just a break in our brain for an hour this week. And I'm just so grateful, Jesus, that you are creative and dynamic and see each one of us and have good for us. And that can be true in 50 different ways with 50 different people in this room. I just pray that any words that I say today would be in service of the things that you want to accomplish. Amen. Awesome. So, as I've mentioned kind of in the past throughout kind of various talks or just conversations, is that I do have another job, and in my other job, I work helping run a before-school program in several schools in Evanston, elementary schools in Evanston. The organization's called Books and Breakfast. We provide tutoring, homework help, a healthy breakfast, and then advocacy for our students amongst teachers and parents and the other people that are involved in their educational process. And Evanston, I always kind of think of Evanston as a little bit of a microcosm of Chicago and then a microcosm of our country in a lot of ways, in the fact that it's a much smaller place that struggles with a lot of the same issues that we struggle with as a country. And so unsurprisingly, Evanston has significantly inequitable outcomes among students academically. And so kind of the whole purpose of our organization to come in every morning is to offer these additional supports for kids with the goal of helping kids discover more equitable outcomes. You know, and a big part of this, a big part of my job as the associate director is staying on top of research. Like, what are considered best practices? If we have this hour a day before school with kids, if we have staff that are looking to build relationships with parents and teachers, what's the best use of that? Like, how do we actually make sure that what we're doing is effective? And I'm a big belief that we need to look into research. And so it's been kind of fun for me to look into all of the research around what makes a difference for kids in their school settings. What actually sets them up for success. And then it's super fun to see how sometimes these things play out. To see how, like, you look at your students, and at the end of the year we do surveying, and we hear teachers telling us that 91% of our students this last year improved their homework completion. Or we see, like, a lower rate of office referrals and tardies for our students. Or having, like, 97% of our parents of our students say they feel more connected to their school community. You know, this is on top of, like, just even smaller scope things of seeing students who, like, read a book from cover to cover for the first time and celebrating that with us. Or kids participating, you can see a picture in the upper right-hand corner, in a science fair, something that they would not have thought of doing prior to the program. And then hearing students tell us things, like being part of our program has actually helped them like school more. Or things like it helped them learn to not give up. Or hearing teachers tell us things like, you've made a positive difference for our school and students, and kids are excited to go to Books and Breakfast that may not be excited to be at school otherwise. They start off the day with a healthy meal and homework help, and this is huge, But the positive connections, that's the icing on the cake, that they feel lucky to have us there. Now, this was a little bit of a shameless plug for an organization I care about, but more so than making a shameless plug for something I feel privileged to be a part of, I say this because in the process of looking at research and then seeing how it plays out with our students, I think it's been a little surprising to see what the piece of all the things we do that actually makes the biggest difference. You know, it's something that I think is a bit of our special sauce. Like, yes, we offer one-on-one tutoring every morning, and there's lots of research talking about how big of a difference that makes. We offer a healthy morning meal for kids before they start the day, and there's lots of research talking about starting your day with a healthy morning meal, which is not a given, is significantly meaningful. Yes, we try to connect our parents to the school community and connect teachers to parents and try to be another voice in their life, and there's lots of research talking about how parents' involvement makes a big difference. But perhaps surprisingly, what I believe, and I think what we see makes the biggest difference, is the effort we put into changing what kids think and believe about themselves. So each morning as we're there, although, you know, there are things we need to accomplish before the school day starts. Like, we do have to complete any undone homework. We have to check homework that's already been completed. And if that's all done, we have to do at least some reading or some math on top of that. And then we get to do games, and we get to eat breakfast. All those things are important. But what we talk about with our site directors, the people that are there, is that the primary focus of the site director is not making sure those things get accomplished. It's setting the tone and the culture for the room that I think we say sometimes to the adults can feel irritatingly positive. With affirming words and positive feedback, by pointing out each positive thing you see a child do, by telling kids that you're genuinely proud of them, and by celebrating the effort they put in, I think simply by caring more about the child than you care about the work they're doing. I think we attempt to try to change the narratives these kids tell themselves. You know, much like this opening video we watched today, we want the kids to leave our program before they enter the next 6 hours of learning, believing that they are somebody. They were somebody when they came, and they'll be a better somebody when they leave. That they are powerful, they are strong, they deserve the education they get there. They have things to do, people to impress, and places to go. You know, and the reason we do this is not just to be nice. I think it makes a nice narrative. I listened to what Rita Pearson said, and I'm captivated, I'm inspired. And it's not just because I think in general, in kind of some altruistic way, I think it would be good to do. Like, both of those are true. But the reason we do this is because the best and most kind of pressing research tells us if we really want to tackle the issues around educational inequity, we can't start with homework. We can't start with math competency. We can't start with reading fluency. We have to start with the mindsets that the kids have about themselves. We have to start with the mindsets that a child has when they walk into the classroom. It all starts with what a child, and honestly, I think this is true of adults too. I don't think this is just a child thing. I think it all starts with what you believe about yourself. When you ask yourself internally the questions, am I capable? Am I smart? Am I able to learn? You know, if I actually put in the effort they're telling me to put in, will it actually make a difference? Do I belong in this classroom with these other students? And I think how we answer these questions and how these kids answer these questions about themselves, positively or negatively, I think it makes all the difference in anything else we do. And of course, a seven-year-old isn't going to be able to tell you what their mindset is. It's not like they're sitting there and journaling, am I able to learn? No, the effort doesn't matter. Like kids, that's not the self-awareness they have. But you know what? They show us it in how they act. A kid doesn't just decide to not try. They've answered certain questions about themselves that have led them to not trying. You know, the most kind of popular research around this is out of University of Chicago. And it talks about how students with positive mindsets, answering these questions positively about themselves, around school and themselves as a learner, that they actually are more productive, they actually will engage in more productive academic behaviors, they are more likely to overcome obstacles to their success. And conversely, students with negative mindsets, those that answer these questions negatively, internally, like that's what they believe, they don't say it out loud, they're more likely to withdraw from behaviors essential for academic success, to give up easily when they encounter setback or difficulty. And what we also know is that kids don't just come up with mindsets. A kid doesn't just decide one day that they're not smart. A kid doesn't just decide one day that their effort doesn't matter. No, these mindsets are things that have been told to them by adults, by culture, by society, through the words that have been said to them, certainly, but I would say even more distinctively with how they're treated. Like I said, a child does not just decide that homework doesn't matter. A child does not just decide that they don't want to put in the work to learn their multiplication table. No, the messages around them from adults, from society, have told them that that effort isn't going to pay off for them. Or have told them, yeah, you're just kind of stupid. And what happens is they begin to believe it's true. And then believing that they will not succeed regardless of effort, believing that they don't belong in that classroom with those other students, then you stop trying. Then you stop putting in effort. I think it takes a truly exceptional human being, I think a 1 in 3 million kind of person, to not fail in that kind of situation. But the good news is, the research also tells us, is that these mindsets are not static. These mindsets are not like immalleable. They in fact can be changed. And that's the whole reason our organization and Books Breakfast exists, because with effort, with investment from adults that are countering those narratives, we can slowly change what people believe about themselves. And I don't know if you've seen any parallel to what I've been saying, but I certainly see a parallel to what we do here at this church. You know, when I think about all of these things, I think about what we see at Books and Breakfast, and I think about the things that we're trying to pull off there, I can't help but think about this church and what we want to do here. And specifically, you know, talking about spending the last month in kids' church, I think about what we do here with kids. And my thinking about this has only really increased in the last month. I've talked about how what we do here with kids at Brownline Vineyard, I've been in there because I've taken a bit of an increased role with kids as kind of a new official position here at BLV that I'm stepping into. As you likely know, Vince and I are co-pastors, and we're the only pastors on staff here at BLV. We share in casting vision, we share in creating community and strategic planning and overseeing the things we do here, but we do break down our responsibilities. Like Vince, you may notice, oversees our music. Of all of those times you've seen me up here singing, it's been never. I really went in hard, actually, when we first started, that I wanted to be in charge of music. But he said, Kyle, you don't sing or play instruments. And I said, I know. And he said, but you also don't know anything about music. And I said, I know, but I have a passion. And I lost that battle, thankfully for all of us. But Vince is also in charge of all of our operations. If you know me well, there's some details I do well in and some details I do not do well in. And so we are all thankful that, like, we are here on Sunday with things that work, thanks to Vince. But as we grow as a church, as we have grown in this last year, it's become more and more evident that we need somebody to pastor our children. As we have, I was in there 2 weeks ago with 13 kids in kids' church. And as I think about all that I've seen and learned at Books and Breakfast, I'm really excited to say that we've reworked our organizational chart for me to be able to step into that role. That I'll still be here, with the adults on Sundays most weeks, but that I will be overseeing the things that we're doing with Kids Church and trying to think creatively with the other folks that are investing in that. And as I think about all of this, an episode from Jesus' life kind of sticks out to me. It's from the Gospel of Matthew. In chapter 18, starting in verse 1. At that time, disciples came to Jesus and said, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Which I kind of love. It feels like a kind of conversation everybody has had before, some version of like, I'm not talking about myself, but like out of all the employees, like who would you say would be the best out of all of us? And he called a child, which, by the way, would be, is like the ultimate power move of like you're standing there and he's like, which of the, just out of everybody, who's the best? And he's like, bring that child over here. And you're like, really, the kid? Okay, that's fine. So he calls the child over them and he placed the child among them and he says, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes such child in my name welcomes me. Especially in light of what we're talking about kids, seems like kind of a capturing verse. Investing in kids is worthwhile. Trying to relate to what a kid's experience is worthwhile. But then, never being too predictable, Jesus continues. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come, but woe to the person whom they come through. Kind of intense. Drowning in a sea. You know, I'm not sure about you, but for me, I always get uncomfortable when I see, like, threats of murder in the Bible. It does. It makes me uncomfortable, and it makes me uncomfortable because it's not infrequent that you come across things like this. And initially, for me, as somebody that grew up reading the Bible, Jesus' words here felt harsh. They felt kind of intense to me. But actually, with my experience of Books and Breakfast, and with all the research that kind of still fresh in my mind, I think I read this in a different light. That when I think about what it's talking about here, how we influence our kids, how we set kids up to fail, the responsibility as adults we have in that, it kind of feels right on. Jesus is engaging them about the stakes of their influence on the kids. You know, and I think about caring for kids here at BLV, I think it feels really real to me in this new role, the high stakes of what we do with kids, how we influence them, what we teach them, how we teach them about who God is, how we teach them about what faith looks like. You know, I think about many stories that I've heard as a pastor. It's not infrequent for when you meet somebody that is kind of coming to church for them to process their like childhood faith trauma. Or I think about my own life. I think about my experiences in church growing up. And there's lots of really positive things that I experienced, like the belief in a living God, an experience of a God that loves me. But I also think of a lot of things that felt like a weight around my neck. That I felt like there was a focus on getting things right, following the rules. Or I don't know if you had experience with a church of memorizing Bible verses. I got to get it right. I have to know it. I have to be able to recite it. Or the use of shame and guilt to make me fall in line. I don't know if you've come across this of like, you know, when you see that child sitting at that other lunch table sitting alone, you should go over and be his friend because Jesus died for you. He was not too tired to die for you. So are you really too tired to go over to that other table to sit with that other kid? Things I've heard, or my favorite is a friend of mine who was home visiting his mother, and they didn't want to wake up for church on Sunday morning, and the mother said to them, was Jesus too tired to die for you on the cross? Sorry, I wasn't even in my notes, but I just, But there was an expectation of like what following Jesus meant was following the rules and falling in line. I mean, my father is a pastor, so this was doubly so. Like, I can't tell you how many times it was like, what would your dad think? Like, aren't you supposed to be a leader, pastor's kid, and follow the rules? And anybody that knows me well knows that that didn't go well. And all of this informed my earliest understandings of who God was. All of this put in my head, like, what was important about faith. And like so many people I know, I as an adult have had to go through a bit of a healing process around my image of God. I had to unlearn so much of what I had been taught. Or even more so, I think it's not even what I've been taught, it's what I saw, what was modeled for me, what the adults in my life through their actions showed me what mattered. I had to rehab my image of God. You know, I, for the longest time, really struggled to believe that God was, like, reliably good and not, like, good under the guise of about to get scary and angry at me. Because that's what the, like, adults, like, were in my life is when I didn't follow the rules in kids' church. They got a little scary and angry with me. You know, I struggled to believe he had grace for me and that he didn't love me based on how I performed or lived up to the expectations that my dad had for me, both literally and figuratively. Not that even my dad ever said those expectations or gave me those expectations, but that other people seeing my father as a pastor put those expectations on me. I've even talked to him now as an adult, and I know that his heart is broken knowing those things. All of those toxic images of faith in God found root in my childhood. You know, in various ways, adults in my life formed those things. They helped put those mindsets in place. I'm going to say not ill-intentioned, not because they were, like, trying to be malicious, although I know lots of people who did experience adults that were ill-intentioned. But just because the stakes of what a kid learns and sees are huge. Like, I, you know, being a parent now, I'm, like, realizing this more and more of, like, there's a great saying of, like, the job of a parent's to minimize the counseling your kids need when they grow up. There's, like, a sense of, like, even being well-intentioned, we influence our children so much. So, with this said, what is our responsibility in this? Like, what do I think our responsibility in this is as a church? And I think our responsibility is to make sure we are putting effort into not putting millstones around the neck of our kids by setting them up for success. And knowing the research and seeing what I've seen in Books and Breakfast, to me, I don't instantly go to, like, what we need to pull off in terms of content. I don't instantly go to what we need to teach them. I instantly go to what are we communicating to these kids they should believe about themselves and they should believe about God. And how do we communicate that? It's not through our words, it's through our actions. And so with all that said, I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on right now at BLV. I'm incredibly grateful for all of the people that have invested in our kids up until now. Like, it has been such a blessing for me as a parent to see what we were, which was like a glorified daycare, to turn it into an actual kids' church. And I'm really thankful to be able to step in as a pastor now and say, our kids' church is at a place where it needs a pastor. That is a testament to the work of those that did this before, like Melissa Bauman and Kezia Brackett. Like, I'm just very thankful for that. So our mission at kids' church here, which we say every week to our volunteers, is that we do have things planned for the day, but our goal is for children to feel seen and loved by us and by God. And as we say each week, again, we believe that the earliest pictures that children develop of who God is comes through two places. One is their parents, and two are the adults involved in a faith community they're a part of, seeing how those adults interact with them. And so if our focus is on obedience and rules, they'll come to see God as one who cares about obedience and rules. If we are focused on being patient and loving and seeing them and caring for them as little people who are unique and loved and valuable, even when they don't do things perfectly, then I believe they can become to see God as one who sees and loves and values them, even when they are not doing things perfectly. And we try to say, again, like, we are the adults in the room. Like, we are not flustered by a kid's behavior or lack of following rules. Like, we're the adults. We're just there trying to be patient and loving and caring because we believe that this will translate to their images of what God communicates to them. And finally, when we do have stories, when we do talk about what God has for us, when we do talk about what Jesus teaches us, we try to tell kids stories from the Bible and then encourage them towards wondering about God and Jesus, not memorizing the right answers. And all of this to say, like, I'm very excited for what's going on in Kid Church. I really enjoyed being in there. And one thing has become clear is that if our church is going to continue to grow and our church is going to continue to be where it needs to be, then our kids' church needs to grow. It's kind of like not a surprising math equation. But in order for that to be true, we need more people to invest in Kids Church. You know, the majority of our growth over the last year have been people with young kids. And I think that that's not shocking, knowing the area we live in. And if that's going to continue to grow, we'd need more volunteers. So, as we can see here, I'm just going to show some pictures to give you a focus on what's a little idea of what's happening at Kids Church each week. So what we can see here is that growing by young families is awesome. But we need to make sure that we have good volunteers in place to care for these kids. And what we recognize right now, we have babies through elementary school students. And if you know anything about developmental stages, there's like five major developmental stages in that group. And what we want to do is have adults that are able to focus in on the needs of those developmental stages. And so what we're talking about here today and what we're talking about as a church is trying to get our church as a whole more bought in on what's going on at Kids Church and have the whole church as a whole think about what it looks like for us to own this, to own how we set these kids up for success, the mindsets we have for these children about who they are, who God is, and what following him looks like. And in case you're thinking, like, what does this look like? I just have a little picture for you right here. Tell me, Will, tell me again, what does a snake do?
You know what the name of the king of serpents is, and it's in Harry Potter too?
What?
A basilisk.
Oh, you guys are all being great snakes.
If you look in their eyes.
So as you can see, Kids Church is a full of energy and life. You learn a lot about animals. You know, I just was thinking about, like 90% of my Kids Church memory was like learning about animals, I think. I think this is awesome because we need people not just to, you know, make sure kids are safe, not just to make sure that they're like being taken care of, but we need to make sure that we have volunteers that can model and encourage positive mindsets about faith. People that are more concerned with a kid feeling loved than making sure that kid is following the rules. And so, yes, we need more people to volunteer for Kids Church or consider doing that, just as like the sustainability of our church going forward. But I want to be clear, making a pitch to volunteer for Kids Church is not just about meeting a need for us. I actually think it's part and parcel for helping people here find a deeper and fuller life. I think that's actually what we say each week we're all about, helping people find lives of depth, fullness, and connection. Because I think advocating that you consider investing in kids, whether it's here at BLV or somewhere else in your life, I think it's worthwhile to consider for your own self. And I'm going to make a pitch for why that is. First, there's almost nothing in this world that can make the kind of difference that investing in kids can. And we've already talked about, kids are just malleable. They have not already come to firm positions and understandings about things. And so just for example, you think about your own life. Like if you make a mental list of like, who are the 10 people that had the biggest impact on me? And then ask how many of them did you experience that before you were 25? How many of them were people that you encountered when you were young? I don't know about you, but for me, like the first 10 people I think of are people that I experienced before I was 20. And so I don't want to overstate this, but like if you want to make a difference in the world, kids are kind of the way to go. It was an overstatement, that's why. Kind of. And so the reason I suggest this is because I think all of us desire to make a difference in the world. And I think that kids are just honestly the most logical place to look for that. And secondly, I want you to consider investing in kids because I have found spending time with kids has the ability to soften our heart. Now, the thing about being an adult is that we are pretty caught up in our own heads. You know, I once heard a psychologist say that the mind of the average adult is so consumed with thinking about things that happened in the past, either with regret or longing, or focused on things that will happen in the future, either with anticipation or stress, that they almost never exist in the present. So the thing about kids, as you saw with all of that energy in the film, it is nearly impossible to not be present when that's going on, or else a child might hurt themselves. I think adulthood has a way of detaching us a bit, overwhelming us, hardening us. And so when I think about what Jesus talked about, is having a faith like a child. You know, I think he talks and is pointing at the having a faith that is present, soft-hearted, something that's actually affected by the world. You know what I notice about kids is that my son will experience more joy and sadness in 1 hour than I experience in like a month. So if you were to volunteer with kids here, I don't want to deceive you. I think Rita Pearson really hit it. It is not easy. It's tiring. It is challenging. I'm not making this pitch that it's going to be this glorious thing. But I think this also points to a little bit of the way that our American consumerist culture impacts the way we think about church. That it should be all about us. I know I at least had this mindset that church is this place that I go and I get filled up so that I can go out into the scary world for the rest of the week. I don't actually believe that to be true. That's not our focus here. Our focus here is to help you live a deeper, more meaningful, more connected life, which includes space for rest and peace. We want that, absolutely. But it also includes challenge and stretching and doing things that are not easy. I can't think of anything in my life that felt truly meaningful that didn't have some challenge with it. So, although volunteering with kids is trying and it is tiring, it also forces you to be present. And I think that experience of even just for like a little bit, once a quarter, once a year, once a month, to be forced to be present for the safety of the child in the room, I think it's good for us. I think it's like exercise. It like forces us to get a little closer to what I think Jesus would long for us in our daily life. And so with all of that said, I want to make a few pitches to you. My first pitch is to consider volunteering at BLV. I think, you know, I don't want to pretend like everybody is on the same pace and place with working with kids. That's just not true. I think some of us, the idea of volunteering with kids once a month would feel really interesting. I think some of us, the idea of like once a quarter, like once every few months sounds about my speed. I think some folks, the idea of doing about twice a year might be your speed. But what I want to suggest is if you're somebody who's a stakeholder here, and if you're somebody that feels invested in this church, we want to ask you at least once a year to volunteer with our kids. We think it's good for us as a church. We certainly need it. But we also think it's good for you. And so we want to make the pitch for you to consider volunteering with kids at least once a year. And we want to say once again, like most things that we do as a church, this is not a black and white rule. Like if you have gone 12 months since volunteering, your stakeholdership is not like revoked. This is just a guiding principle. We understand, like, you know what, maybe you just had a newborn and going all week with a newborn and then all of a sudden volunteering with kids, maybe not the greatest thing to do at that point. Or maybe you were a teacher and you do spend all week teaching and it's your first year teaching and that is a really hard experience. And so maybe that's not the right year for you to do it. But I want to say by and large, we want to ask everyone that's everyone here that considers themselves a stakeholder to consider volunteering at least once a year. The second thing we want to suggest is to support organizations that care for kids. So I just made a pitch for the organization I work for, Books and Breakfast. I think that is certainly worth investing in. And I think that most of these organizations, so Books and Breakfast and Family Matters, are two organizations that we are already connected with as a church. One of them is a before school program, the other one is mostly after school. So if you have time and like maybe Sundays don't work, but you do have an afternoon every Wednesday, or you are a morning person, we consider looking to invest in that area. And lastly, this is, I think a small thing, and this is, I want to suggest that you try meeting kids on their level. Once again, we are different. Not all of us are kid people. That's fine. I don't want to say, like, because you don't enjoy being around kids, there's something wrong with you. I don't think that's true at all. I think our temperaments and our personalities create very different types of people. But what I want to encourage is if you identify as not a kid person, I want to challenge you to resist leaning into that narrative. You don't need to spend your life around kids. You don't really even need to enjoy doing the things kids do. But I think that we still need to hold ourselves to some level of account to say, we still influence kids whether we intentionally do or not. And this is true for the kids in our life. The kids around us will see us and learn from us, regardless if we want them to be learning from us. And so I have one suggestion here, which is just meeting them on their level. I have a friend who has said to me before, like, I'm not really a kid person. Said those words, I'm not really a kid person. Not really somebody I think would jump at volunteering for kids' church. However, every single time my son sees him, he gets down on my son's level, looks at him in the eye, and says, "How are you doing? How's it going?" Something as simple as just acknowledging my son on his level. Give him a high five, something like that. This is not a high bar. And the thing is, this is not true of most adults. Most adults don't do this with kids. And so just by the small act of seeing my son, what's hilarious is we'll be reading stories at night, and my son will randomly insert this friend into the story. Like, there's lost shoes. Is it his lost shoes? And you're like, I don't know. And when we pray at night, we're like, who do you want to pray for? And he lists all the kids in his classroom and then always lists this one friend to pray for at night. And what I'm saying about this is just because you don't think you're a natural person that thinks that, like, I identify, I'm a kid person, doesn't mean that you can't have an impact on kids just by being present to see the kids that you do encounter. And so, in a moment, we're going to transition into a time of singing and prayer. And I would love for you to consider if there's any way in your life makes sense for you to invest in kids. Here at BLV, certainly, particularly if you're a stakeholder, kids in your life, kids here in the city. And as we're going to do some singing, we'll have a prayer team available in that middle section, just folks that will be there to come alongside you and pray for you. If you come in here with like a physical, emotional, circumstantial need, they'd just be happy to be there with you in prayer. And so we invite you to go do that as we all come together in a moment and sing. And as we're singing, we just invite you to engage in whatever way that you see fit. You can dance, you can sit, you can sing along, you can stand, whatever makes most sense for where you're at right now. And as we're doing that, I do encourage you to pray. What does it look like for me to invest in kids? Maybe you're already investing in kids. That's great. Maybe you're not, but God's like, yeah, this just isn't the right season for you to do it. That's great too. But I think it is worthwhile to at least pause and ask the question. And I invite you to do that as we're singing together. So with that said, I'd love to invite up the folks that are going to lead us in some music. And I'm just going to pray for us. If everyone wants to stand with me as I pray. Jesus, I believe you are good. I believe that you care for us. I have an obvious bias in this conversation as somebody that spends much of my life with and around kids. But I pray that you would use my bias and my framework to call out in anybody here that has something to be called out. And in any ways that my bias maybe shot right over somebody or missed where somebody was at, I pray that you were gracious and good. But I pray for all of us that this sense of care for what we teach kids and how we interact with them. I pray that that would feel like something that we can actually act on. And then I just pray lastly for kids here at Brownline Vineyard. I pray every child that walks through here would walk away with a greater sense of who they are, a greater sense of their belief in themselves, a greater sense in their confidence in who they are, and a belief that you are caring and good and patient.